Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The facts that will be presented are true.
Yes, PJ.
Hello there.
Now, PJ, what have we learned about Shakespeare?
He's in the heart of that!
Hello. Dark Place Robert and Playboy Alex.
Doing all right. Glad to be here again.
So I've given you those nicknames. I'm not a fan of that one. Well, that's where people will know you from. That's
why you're going to know me from that one. But let's carry on anyway.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Join us for Shakespeare written. Spanish plays and poetry, rock star interviews, film reviews, Dark Place Dreamers, and more. Patreon.com/booksboys.
Welcome back to part two with the Dean and EJ, the Books Boys.
Woo! Whoa, baby!
So the next book I read is called The Chanteuse from Cape Town by John Constable. And it says in the front, a Saul Nemo murder mystery.
Oh, Lord.
So this, Saul Nemo is a kind of detective. Well, he's not a kind of detective. He is a detective. But he worked initially with, so this is setting in Cape Town, right?
Right.
South Africa. And he originally was with SAPS, which was the police force there, but he's since left that police force.
Excuse me again, who's the author?
I think I should actually. John Constable.
John Constable. So this is not a modern, and this is not a historical novel. You're going back to modern.
No, this is a modern. We're going to have, we have two old novels. We're about to have two brand new novels.
Okay, because I didn't think Collins or Dickens would talk about, Cape Town. But anyway.
No, usually they don't. Usually they don't. So Saul Nemo is going to try to deal with this murder mystery. And the way it comes about is he's got a lot of money now. He's doing well. He's got a nice house, flashy cars, you know, a nice watch, all the rest of it. He's doing quite well for himself. He's not, you know, working with the police anymore or anything like that. So that's fine. And he has a friend, Frank, who was a kind of almost like a father to me type character.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank has married Mira, who is a chanteuse. She's a singer.
Chanteuse.
And, you know, he kind of, she's a bit younger than him, and he falls in love with her when he sees her singing, and it kind of comes out of nowhere, and they get together. And there is a little element of, you know, do we know much about her past? No one really knows where she came from. Was she having affairs? Is her past a bit shady? And Saul's not really sure. Okay. So the book opens and we get into the action straight away. Mira is kidnapped and they want $50 million in the ransom. And Frank runs a company called Zipit, and he's a lot of other investments and a lot of property, whatever it is. He's got the money. If they sell things off and if they do whatever, they can get the money. So they go to a chap called Dutoit to help organize all this and facilitate it, this legal chap. And he basically convinces Frank to sell his company off very cheaply to this pair of brothers and get the money. Because they reckon the company was worth double or maybe more, maybe, you know, between double and triple what he got for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, then tragedy befalls multiple characters in the book, but I'm not going to tell you which ones. But Dutoit is this, you know, he's the villain. He's this arrogant kind of guy who's setting all this up. But there's other villains that will come about later as well. Saul goes in to facilitate the bargain. So he's going to do bank transfers. He says you'll get, you know, 20 now, 20 when we see Mira, and 10 when we get away safely or something like that. But what happens, of course, is he says, you know, it was an imperfect plan, like all these types of plans. And because it was imperfect, it fell apart and the whole plan does not work. So we do end up with multiple tragedies, as I say, as the novel goes on. At one point, they try to kill Saul, even. They try to blow up his car. Well, not luckily for the poor employee, but some guy was picking up the car to do some work on it, and he ends up getting killed instead of Saul. So lucky for Saul, but not for the poor car company guy. There's also a lady, Aisha, who is Saul Nemo's love interest. But it's kind of like, I'm going away for a few weeks. I'll hang out when I'm back, but then I'm going to go away for another week or two. And he, you know, he's not really sure how into him she is or if there is a real future. She's very distant. He doesn't know that much about her day-to-day life. You know, it's just we're together, but most of the time you're not here kind of situation, you know? So they're a little bit distant. Right. So you get some personal aspects there as well. And then he goes on a hunt to find out some information about Mira to see, like, what do I know about this? How can I help my friend Frank? But also, you know, I don't trust Dutoit. And this kind of stuff. And who tried to kill me? Who blew up my car and tried to kill me? So he becomes a kind of a rogue, you know, and he works with Saps, with the police a little bit, but he's also very standoffish and arrogant towards them because he doesn't trust them. And he thinks that some of the cops are actually, you know, bad guys, disguised.
Yeah, of course.
Or they're dirty cops or whatever it is. And one of the police chiefs is also a bit of an ass. So he kind of comes up against him a lot.
Right.
It's a very, very good book. It's full of action. It's not that long. You know, I think let me just double check, about 300 pages, maybe a couple pages short of that, 296. And it's fun. It's action paced. I mean, a lot of the stuff that happens by 60 pages in, you've already had twists and turns all over the place and the action massively developing. So it's not a book that, you know, makes you wait for content. And the next book I'm about to review is similar in that regard. But yeah, if you like, you know, it's not your usual murder mystery. This isn't a closed room. This isn't an Agatha Christie, you know. It is a bit more modern. It's got that fast-paced action type scenario. And I would definitely recommend it. So I think I liked all the books that I read this month. And I'll get to the fourth one in a moment. But I'm just quickly reviewing my notes to see if there's anything else to mention about this one. It does end with a big set piece. I won't give details, but a big action movie type set piece out in the nowhere, and all this action stuff going on. At one point, he makes the police meet him on a helicopter and give them information, and they go out to this guy's farm, and he gets, you know, Saul gets kidnapped and beaten and attacked and left for dead at one point. So there's action type sequences as well, and there's some really bad mafiosa types.
Sounds a bit like Better Call Saul. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, I suppose in a way it is, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
In a way it is. There's some very good stuff. And there's some nice scenes where he tries to track down a friend of Mira's and he ends up dealing with these people. The girl was in, with these nuns, the girl was in a kind of refuge for a while. And then there's some, immigrant types that are maybe not too well off. They're running a little shop, but he tries to help them out. They've got some information from this girl. So all this stuff happens. But it turns out this poor woman, she's only a side character, so I don't remember her name. But this poor woman was attacked by her rich husband and, you know, had acid thrown on her and her face burnt and was just left, you know, and she's now taking refuge with the nuns and things like that. So because because she gives some information to help him out, Saul says, you know,
it welds into the dark themes then, yeah.
It does. He says, your husband's rich, why are you not getting into the money? And just, well, he's, you know, I'm poor, he's got a good lawyer. So Saul takes off his incredibly expensive watch and says, sell that watch and get yourself the best lawyer you can find. And take down your husband. So there's nice touches of darkness, but also humanity. Yeah. And the girl's called Reva. I've just found the notes because it says, when I tell Reva, she'll say she saw God in you. And he says, well, I'm embarrassed. If she does, just tell her it was nothing but a trick of the light. it's a well-written book as well. You know, that's just one instance of little kind of humorous types. But there's a chap called Swartman who comes in. He's running a winery, or kind of a vineyard, and he's the real villain towards the end. And maybe he's got links with Dutoit. But I'm going to stop it there.
Okay, well, sounds good. It's intriguing the way it makes it sound. And they definitely didn't put any spoilers this time. So there are lots still going to happen.
I'm learning. You see, we did a course. We did a Books Boys training day. Not giving spoilers, you know?
Not giving spoilers, and me, myself, then maybe just say something about the plot rather than just like the first pages.
Also, I found a website. There's lots of podcast directories and websites and whatever, and I can't remember which one it was, but I found a review website, and I just popped in Books Boys, and on this particular website, we had 27 reviews, and we came out, I think, 4.5 stars. So, out of 5, really? I'm pretty happy with that, yeah.
Nice, well, thanks very much, River.
And you just know... The 26 of those people gave us, you know, good ratings, and one guy was like, there's not enough Twilight or something, you know. they forgot to review, you know, Whips and Chains, the erotic novel, or something, you know.
the shame of Doña Petra and her lover boy.
Yeah, like what? Yeah, people are confused. Like, people are reviewing Spanish things, and you know, like Wilkie Collins and Balzac, and like, where's the sparky?
I know what that was. That was probably some guy who's into his Scandinavian literature and is very upset that, you know, it's all just Spanish, French. And, you know, a twinkle of a tiny bit of Italian, Russian.
We cover Russian, yeah.
Old English, not modern English, just old. Maybe it's a modern English man, just upset that, you know, you're not reviewing modern novels from the 60s.
Could be. You know, I didn't know there were modern books, but I'm reading some, so I'm reading two modern books this month. I should say, you know, we cover English books, Irish books, French books, Spanish books, a little bit of Latin American, Russian. And we've covered a Nigerian author before. Like Japanese. we're open to reviewing, you know, books. You've covered some Asian books as well. We're open to really anything.
Yeah, really are. Like I always actually, you know, this, I've always make a point of discovering new authors from new countries, because it's another way of discovering more about that country.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why I learn languages. I don't know, I've told you this before, but I told the listeners that I'm learning a language, one language a month. And people think I'm a bit insane.
That sounds ridiculous. Like, that sounds implausible.
Yeah, but I'm learning a language a month, and I don't speak it perfect, for God's sake, but it makes me learn a lot about the culture. I connected with the other languages. It's my job as well as a linguist. And just was reading and also learning languages. I find it's another way of becoming more open to the world. You know, it's not just one country. It's also, there's so much stuff I'd still like to read from countries where I've never read literature. Like I've seen lots of great Korean movies, for example, and that showed me something about Korean, you know, the world, but no Korean literature whatsoever. Yeah, so
yeah,
I've never read anything from Estonia, for example. So like, I'm very also open to new stuff and even more new stuff. And
there's such good stuff. Before we get to the last book of the episode, PJ, Alfred has found a bufanda. He was very worried that he was in your bad books there, for taking all the money and not talking on the show. Not. So he's got himself a bufanda.
You're right.
Yeah, there we go. You're
forgiven. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to mention the language I've learned this month is Faroese. If anyone has heard of it, the Faroese Islands are between Iceland and Scotland. Lovely Scandinavian languages, because I've done Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, and Icelandic. Now into Faroese. And if anyone, I just want to mention, if anyone wants me to review a foreign language book, I'd be more than interested, because it's very hard to find books in Faroese. It's not a very spoken language. Mm. So I'll send them to the headquarters, and I'll do my best to decipher the old Icelandic Faroese script.
All right. On to my last book, then. This one's by an Irish author, PJ.
Ooh, la la.
A Martin Trenner. He's from Ireland. He currently lives in Lisbon, in Portugal.
Very nice of him.
Right. And this is book one in the Fall of the Ancients series. And I believe this is the first book to come out, and we're waiting on the others still, I believe. It's called The Logos Prophecy. Okay. And again, we're talking, you know, 300 pages. This one I just finished a few days ago, and this was just fantastic. So all four books that I've read this month, you know, we don't really do star ratings on individual books, but if I was put down to give the books a rating, I think all four would be somewhere in the 4 to 5 star range. You know, I think they're all very good books this month.
Nice. That's good. I haven't always had those episodes, so that's good.
Yeah.
I'm happy with my book too, so it's been a good reading month.
Fantastic. So we have two main chaps, right? We have a guy called Jordan, and he's a bit of a sciencey, you know, nerdy type character. He runs a science magazine, but he's also a bit of a reserved, shy type, okay? £5,000 gets donated into his account. He doesn't know who from or why. And he gets some anonymous messages saying, you know, come to town and we'll meet you, but no one turns up. And then eventually a lady does turn up in his house, and she's very intimidating to him. And turns out she's maybe reading his mind or planting suggestions in his mind. Okay.
That's Jordan. That's very intriguing.
Yeah.
I like it. It's been far. Wow.
Now we have Ari. And Ari, she's a conspiracy theorist nut, right? All she does is, like, she's obsessed with every conspiracy theory going. She runs a blog under a pseudonym. The blog is called Hard Truth by Harper T. Jackson. Jordan sees the blog and says, oh, she's ridiculous. She's the worst type of conspiracy theory nut, okay?
Right.
And she wears her The Truth Is Out There t-shirt and, you know, every kind of trope she's doing, Illuminati, you know, everything else.
Yeah.
But the thing that these two people have in common is they start getting this symbol sent to them, this kind of ancient symbol, which is some kind of circle with a tressel and a cross in it. So some kind of ancient symbol is popping up on their phones and computers and things like that, and they wonder, where is this coming from? Are we being hacked? You know, I don't remember opening this web page or whatever. Where are these coming from?
Yeah.
It turns out that these two people are going to eventually meet and that they have a linked destiny. Okay.
Oh, well, I like it so far.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this is an ancient symbol, and my God, the amount of grind that this book covers in 300 pages is astonishing. Wow. So this girl Ari's half Cambodian and half Chinese. And
okay.
It turns out, this is a slight spoiler, but it's important. It turns out that in Cambodia, there was at one time an American soldier died there, and that American soldier was the grandfather of Jordan. And who watched him die but the mother of Ari? And that caused these families to be kind of spiritually connected.
Hold on, not too many spoilers now. That's the kind of story I like, yeah. Oh, I like that.
And this is only the first few pages. Like, as I said, this book goes... So much happens in this book. It turns out that a lot of the conspiracy theories are true. That's the big first twist.
Right, okay.
And there's these two ladies that come to help them, and they're called Gnostics. And there's also 13 families called Aryans, not the one that the Nazis talked about, but they do say that it's an older word.
I've heard of it, it's very different.
They're the families who are actually running everything in the world. And this has been going on for 13,000 years. So it turns out that 13,000 years ago was a kind of paradise, a kind of Garden of Eden type society. And the conspiracy theories that Ari believed about an ancient global civilization were true. But she thought it was aliens, and it wasn't aliens. It was just, you know, these 13 families in Earth. And they have these long generations and generations of families involved in keeping power and control. And the Gnostics are trying to have a long-term plan to fix things and bring about a paradise again one day. And they recruit these two people as star children to help them. And I don't really want to say any more.
Right, okay, sounds great.
It's sounds really good.
On the plot, that's the one I'd like to read the most. I mean, that's great.
It covers, they're traveling all around the world at times. They're in Cambodia, they're in Santorini, they're in Dublin.
Oh, I like
point.
That when they do that, yeah.
Yeah. Ari has a friend who goes to Dublin and sets up his music business there, Mateus, that she kind of loves, but, well, I'm not going to spoil it, but she thinks she's in love with her friend. He's in Dublin. So all this kind of stuff's happening. They learn that they can, there's these abilities to manipulate people's minds, and that's how people have been, you know, maybe kept control for so long. And these 13 families are also manipulating economies, natural disasters, everything throughout the world. So every world problem they've caused. Okay? Every economic problem.
That's intriguing, yeah.
Natural disasters, somehow they were behind it. The two world wars. They caused, you know, the economic crash in 2008, COVID, everything. And it brings together so much history and mythology and just geography, you know, just all over the world to bring about these amazing stories. But it's also the humor. Ari's very much, you know, constantly swearing and, you know, and very rude, whereas Jordan's this timid kind of nerdy chap. And seeing their interactions together is funny. And then the two Gnostics are these kind of polite, you know, Asian ladies who are serving tea. And it's almost like the way the different characters interact is very funny because they're all very
different. It's a great mix, right?
You know, so it's a fantastic mix. And the only it's not a spoiler, but the only clue I'm going to give is that there is a third Gnostic, and we don't know who he is, and we're going to maybe find out later who he is and what he's doing. But he's doing some other project. Okay, so this one is I would recommend all four of this month's books. But it's one of those ones, you know, we read books before where I don't want to give too much away in the plot, like when we did Gallery of Mothers and those ones, the Latshaw books. It's almost like just talk about the first quarter or the first half, because otherwise, like, so much is happening in the book that, you know, you just need to read it, I think. Okay, I think we're just getting a phone call here. PJ, 2 seconds, I'm just going to see who's on the line. Hello, you're through the books, boys. You've got
Deep on the line. It's Martin Trainer.
Oh, hello, Martin. So lovely to hear from you. And
how
just
you guys?
Perfectly timed, as we were just chatting about your book, The Logos Prophecy.
That's good.
Can see you got it there behind you as well.
Okay. So, funny you say that. I've got one in front of me too.
There we go. So you're not an imposter.
No, just in case. Just because there's questions.
We chatted a bit about the plot there, so I'm not going to kind of bore you by repeating all that, but I want to ask you, well, the first question I really want to ask is, when's book two coming out? Actually, I should ask that later, but I need it.
Okay, well, book two is slotted. I haven't written it yet.
Right.
This is the thing. It's slotted for January 25. We decided to leave a two-year gap between the books to let the various time points of each book settle.
Ah, right, okay. Yeah, because the book does catch up to current times, right? So we want to, you know, March 2023, for example, is mentioned, you know, so I guess that makes sense. You're going to make me wait 2 years, which has just broken my heart. I love this. I really, really love this book. What made you want to write? I mean, because let's be honest, this tackles a lot. I mean, it says it right on the back here, 13,000 years of exploitation, 3 months to put it right. So there's a lot of material in these 300 pages, you know. What made you undertake this? Like, how did you go about that?
This was a brainchild of I used to have a collaboration with Ed Greenwood, who is the creator behind Forgotten Realms, Dungeons and Dragons. He started a publishing company, and I got kind of brought into that. And I met one of the people who were involved with it, who sadly died a couple of years ago, but he was my agent for a while, Sal Nancy in Canada. And when I was over visiting Ed, we were doing some, I went to Canada, so we did some brainstorming for other stories. We were sitting out having coffee one morning, me and Sal, and we discovered that we had a joint fascination, not for conspiracy theories as such, but for the people who believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we started saying, what if they were all real? What if it was all a big thing that was set in motion a long, long time ago? And everything from shape-changing lizards being the queen to, slightly, not credible, but slightly more believable ones, like, for example, the ancient civilization theory.
Yeah.
And we went down a hole, and then we forgot about it, and then we carried on some other business, and then the tag thing kind of went to one side. And then about 2018, Sal reached out to me and said, do you want to write that book? As a matter of fact, do you want to write a whole universe? So then he said, give me 64 pages of a treatment, which we did, encompassing from 13,000 years ago to 20,000 years in the future. And this was the first book that came out of it. This was basically the now part of it, where we discover what conspiracy theories were for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So does that mean the next book is moving forward into the future then?
The next book's moving it back into 13,000 years ago.
Oh, right. We're going back. Okay.
You're going back. And then the third book is 20,000 years in the future.
Wow. Okay.
And
the idea is that it all
ties nicely together.
You're covering a massive... I mean, I thought 13,000 years was enough time to cover, but that's just not enough for you. You've got to go straight into the future.
Well, basically, you mentioned that 13,000 years and 3 months to get it right. That's why I tried to do a fairly fast-paced book, because, you know, this has been going on for 13,000 years, but the time's up. That's it.
Yeah.
It's make or break.
It certainly gives you, because it had me a little bit anxious at times, because I'm thinking, like, we've got the 3 months, and I'm also thinking, like, oh, we've got 100 pages left, and I'm thinking, what's going to happen? Like, do we have time to kind of get to things? And obviously, yeah, of course we do. You've got it, you know, resolved. But it gives you that kind of feeling of pace, and that kind of, you almost feel the fear of the characters, like, are we going to get this done on time? And obviously, I'm not going to go into too many like spoilers, but we do have the snag with Ari, who kind of becomes demotivated towards the end for one reason or another, and I'm not saying why. So then I'm thinking, oh no, we're not gonna make it, we're not gonna get it done. So I really like that, and I was, as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, are we, you know, is this gonna work? And then it does, and it just comes together perfectly, you know. So I think it's very, very well written, and the pacing is perfect, because as I said to you before, even from the beginning, it just hits you like, boom, we're off. There's no messing around, you know.
I didn't want to, the key thing for me when I wanted to pace the book, I tried certain things. There's certain chapters that didn't go in, and I tried certain other approaches, and
right.
I tried to give the kind of slow build kind of idea and more puzzles and more stuff like that. And then I realized very quickly, like, you know, if time's running out, they and the powers that be and us on all sides will be wanting to move very quickly. To either succeed or put a bullet in it, you know, and particularly, so I had this mental picture of, instead of traveling around the world, they're hopping from site to site. Mm-hmm.
It is, and they do get around very, very quickly, but I think it paces perfectly. The conspiracy theory thing, I suppose you've sort of answered it, but I really wanted to ask you how you got into that, and I suppose I was wondering, are you into any conspiracy theories yourself, or is it just perfectly an outside, you know, looking in perspective?
It is purely an outside looking in perspective. That said, I am down the rabbit hole.
And now you're in.
Yeah, I was down there anyway, and then I went researching this book. I went further and further and further. Like the wealth of research I did on this, there's only about 1% of it in the book.
Wow. And even reading it, it comes across that you've had to do a lot of research just in terms of history, geography. There's some mythology, you know, astrology, everything's in there. There's a lot of we're seeing that you've had to do a lot of work to get it. And you're saying that even only a small portion of that.
Even a small fraction, because there's everything, you know, is, you know, you know, the common ones, the flat earth theories, the lizard people theories. But whenever you branch off into certain things like ancient aliens or ancient civilizations, there's offshoot branches of that as well. There's an academic argument going on within the non-academic conspiracy theory world of what the true conspiracy is, you know. And that, yet again, you end up going off a tangent and you're down another hole. I just love it. I'm fascinated by the people who create them. Originally, I was fascinated as, do the people who do all this work and put it out there in various YouTube videos and all, do they wholeheartedly believe in this? Is this what they've dedicated their life to? It? How much of themselves?
That's the question you always wonder with conspiracy theories, with, you know, cults, with all that kind of stuff, is do the people run on it buy into it, or is it purely there to fool other people and manipulate? And we don't know, I suppose.
Well, you don't know, but let's take, for example, the flat earth one. One of my favorite ones of the flat earth thing is, like, you know, realistically, to quote Father Dougal and Father Ted, you know, you don't believe in that now, do you? You know, it's the whole prospect of it is ludicrous. Like, the guy's writing it on his phone. Where, how does he get to the satellite signal? Is the satellite on a pole? You know? So I go along those lines. But yeah, when you read about the flat earthers, like, there's a guy who gave his life for it. He went up in a rocket to 10,000 feet. He could have gone up in a plane and been even higher, but he went up in a rocket that he built himself to prove that the earth was flat. And he obviously buys that much into it.
That's dedication, I suppose, of a sort. I want to talk a wee bit about the characters, because I don't know what you hear about them. So the two main characters, obviously, Ari and Jordan. I like Jordan a lot. Maybe I empathize with him a little bit more, but he is the one that's a little bit more grounded, and he's kind of got his scientific background. I like Ari. Initially, I think, oh my God, she's just a loudmouth and whatever. But then you get to like her as you go along, and you see the way they interact together, and it's lovely, and her feelings for her friend and everything are delightful. But did you try to make them as different as possible? Was that the intention?
I'm I can't speak for any other writers, but whenever I start with a character, I have a fairly rough idea. It's a bit like meeting somebody on the street. You kind of form an opinion of them, kind of.
Yeah.
And then the more you get to know them, you know, and that sometimes they surprise you more as time goes on. And that basically goes, I didn't really know Ari until I started writing her, and then I got to know her more. Jordan is a bit more along the lines of people who I would know, you know, who are academic, but they're into weird stuff. But yes, from an academic point of view, they find it fascinating, a bit like myself. So Jordan, there's a lot of me in Jordan in that, you know, the idea, not that hypnosis can cure all, but why does it do certain things? You know, so that's how he comes along. Ari, I love to death. I had so much fun writing her. It was unbelievable because she just opened up for me in front of me as well.
She's the fun one for sure.
And to Jordan initially was, the plan behind Jordan was really for him to ground Ari. And it worked out the other way around. When he came in to ground Ari, Ari ended up drawing him out.
Yeah, and it's nice to see how slowly, like, he accepts some things, but he's still like, okay, but this still doesn't make sense. I don't like it, you know?
Yeah. Wait, even all the way through, he still won't admit to the things that he's witnessed, essentially, you know? And he's speaking, you know, statements like, you know, I've seen it now, I know it now, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about Lena, then. What's the inspiration for her? Because she crops up, I guess, around the middle, and she initially comes in, and I'm thinking, who is this badass, you know? I mean, the first time we see her, she wants to just attack these two girls that she's just seen, you know, I think it's in the pub, and then we don't see her for a little while until she pops back up, and obviously she's got the contract, essentially, to take care of these two. But she's a very strong character in her own right, but at the same time, she's dealing with a lot of issues as well, or maybe demons, even.
With somebody who does that kind of job for a living, as in murdering people, there has to be something unhinged there. There has to be some troubled past. There has to be some genesis for her to be so callous, hard, and ruthless. But also, with the right nudge, sorry to borrow from the book, but with the right nudge, she can make mistakes.
Yeah.
And in her line of business, it's not good. The plan for Lena was to basically be the instrument for the Caucasus exploits into trying to stop the events.
And the Caucasus, so of course, being the 13 families.
And the last thing they want is to lose control. And rather than going in all guns blazing, they have a precision knife, a stiletto, if you like, that will go in, and that's Lena. And she's just an employee. So that's it. She's an employee who does a contract and then walks away. But this one hasn't been achievable.
Yeah. Because of what you mentioned, the nudging, right? So you can kind of, these Gnostics have these abilities to put little ideas in your mind and little nudges, but that's part of it all. But I don't want to give too many detail, you know, spoilers in the details. I do want to ask you, though, the last kind of thing I want to ask you is, how realistic do you think this is from a perspective of, let's imagine we're 13,000 years ago and we're in this kind of almost Eden-like, you know, paradise, global civilization, whatever it is, and the selfishness of certain people takes over and ruins it all? I mean, I feel like that's probably quite realistic. I mean, do you feel that way yourself?
We wanted to ground it. This is all back to that original conversation, is that, you know, whatever we were saying, me and Sal were saying, what if all the conspiracy theories were true, but they've all been orchestrated by humans. Like, there is no aliens, there is no pan-dimensional beings. This is humans who have done this as a control mechanism on the back of... So it's muddy in the waters. Let's give you politics. I'll give you politics and religion, and we'll change it a few years, and I'll give you something else. And then I'll muddy the waters up by saying things like, you know, well, is that real? And is that not real? There's fairly good evidence that the whole Project Blue Book in the United States about UFOs was just a ploy to take eyes away from certain munitions that they were building and stealth planes and stuff. So, yes, I do believe that there has been some kind of orchestrated oligarch, if you like, control of the world. I think we're living in it now. I think the corporations were there. And, you know, we had the robber barons of the past. We had the feudal system before that.
It's easy to think this stuff as well.
13,000 years of concerted same thing. Mm. Probably not. But the lessons were, yeah.
It's easy to think this stuff when you see like the increasing levels of billionaires and all the kind of stuff that's going on today. The fact that the media takes us from one crisis to another, you know, and we just work through. We've got COVID, we've got Brexit, we've got Putin and Ukraine, we've got Trump, and there's just this endless cycle of tragedy after tragedy, you know. I've yet to turn on the news and they just say, we're all good today, lads. You know, there's always something going on. So,
well, it's the squirrel, isn't it? I think, I can't remember which newspaper. It's a British newspaper and I can't remember which one it is. But it has a section, and I think it might be an online one, where it says, while you were distracted by this today, these are the 10 bills that were passed in the House of Commons. Or, you know, the things that are slipping under the radar.
Yes.
You know, so we're keeping, so it's, yeah, oh, squirrel, look over there, blah, 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 yeah, get these through, lads. And usually, yet again, as you said, it's to bolster some level of the oligarch system that's, that owns all the media and everything.
So I think, do I believe there's 13 families running it? Probably not, but do these types of things happen? Yeah, I think they do. You know, and that's why it is realistic. And as you say, it is grounded in reality. I'm going to let you give, do you want to give a quick plug for your website or where people can buy the book before we let you go?
Oh, yes. You can buy the book anywhere. You can buy the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Work, the book department, basically anywhere that sells books. And my website is martintrainer.com. That's Martin, martintrainor.com. And you get all, there's a whole lot of stuff on there. There's old interviews and stuff. And there's a couple of free reads. So, and plenty of links to the book.
Awesome.
So,
I'll probably link in the show notes anyway. And I'll ask you then, before you go, the final question we ask everyone, which is, if there's any existing book you wish you'd been the person to write, what would it be?
Foucault's Pendulum by Umberto Eco.
Okay. I haven't read any Umberto Eco, but I have one on my shelf. It's coming up in the next few months. I just haven't quite gotten around to it yet. So that'll be interesting. Give me the quick sort of 30-second synopsis of that one.
It's a guy a bit right up my street, similar to this. It's about a guy who that works in a publishing company and he does tabletop books and he's bored. And he decides to essentially create a secret society only to discover that it exists and it begins hunting them.
Oh, so it already exists. Okay. Yeah. That sounds like it's pretty up your street. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Martin, it's been lovely having you on the show. Thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on.
No problem. Have a great evening. Take care.
Cheers now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, guys, if you want to get in contact, go to your booksboys.com. That's where we've got all of our links and our bits and pieces. You can also email us, booksboys@hotmail.com. And we're on the Instagrams and things at Booksboys Podcast. Also, we've got links to our other projects on there. You can buy a t-shirt if you want to get a t-shirt that says, you know, keep calm and read your Dickens, or is this a holiday? Is this a holiday? Or, you know, you can also listen to our music, the 2022 tapes, and there's some stuff on Spotify and everything. So it's all there on booksboys.com. And you get your little episodes of Playboys and Dark Place Dreamers are coming out for free as well. But don't forget, go to patreon.com/booksboys for all the latest content. We did a short episode, I think, PJ.
Yeah, it's pretty short, yeah. I mean, like, yeah.
Fantastic. So we're going to close.
I mean, I don't know if it's pity. It's good or bad. So today, this time we got a short episode. The last one went very long. So there's a bit of a balancing out, yeah.
We're going to close with a song, and it's a song that we've both, I've got two options and you're not going to remember either of them, so it's going to be an interesting pick.
Oh.
We made two songs together back in 2015, I believe. One of them is called Vanishing Into Midnight and the other is called The New Planet, and I thought those were appropriate themes based on that last book. And it's potluck. You're going to pick which one you would like us to close with.
Vanishing Into Midnight.
Okay, there we go. And so if the DJ would spin that record, we'll be back in about a month.
See ya.
vanishing into midnight. The darkening, fading light cascading all around him as he goes. Heading for the only place he knows. The midnight, the darkness, his sanctuary from it all. From the hell that is this earth. From everything he cannot cope with. From life and from death. From eternity itself. He wears apathy as his cloak. He goes to a place he doesn't know. He bathes in the seas of confusion, enraptured by his own illusion. The world consists of that which we perceive. There is nothing around us, only that which we imagine. And we imagine a void of darkness and despair, of people who never care. Why? Light is made out of hatred and aggression. The world is falling into another deep recession. I try to fly away. There's no reason to stay. The world falls apart. Nothing can be saved forevermore. So I find another world, one that I can enjoy. In my mind, it closes in. Reality sets in. So I fly away, vanishing into midnight. Love can be no more. I cannot any longer enjoy. It has done me in. A life full of sin.
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. Ha! This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
Hunting for Botanists.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either PodSafe or used with permission.
If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/booksboys, get the show early and all of our bonus Boof Fan the Boys shows, and you can also check out our music on Spotify or Apple Music.
Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends and come back next time for another episode of Books Boys.
Read some books!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.